Hello, and welcome to No Man's Land. This week has seen the launch of the Popular Conservative Group, a new subdivision, new faction within the Conservative Party, led by former Prime Minister Liz Truss. We're going to talk about a little bit about them, but a little bit more about the different groups within the Conservative Party, the groupings within Parliament, and what all of this means. So, hello, Steve, and welcome.
Hi Martin, how you doing?
I'm all right, thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good.
Excellent.
I've not particularly been enjoying popcorn, but I don't know how many people have.
Well, let's start with this week's events then. So, what do we know about this new movement called the Popular Conservatives or Popular Conservatism?
Not a lot. As I say, when I say I was not enjoying it, I didn't particularly watch it. But it seems to be a sort of a launch event with a lot of the usual suspects. I'm thinking particularly of Jacob Rees-Mogg, who I think gave the second or third speech. But it appears to be another group of conservatives who are kind of jostling for position after, looking forward to really after the next election, and trying to define some kind of vision for what they think conservatism should be. It is a lot to do, it seems, with anti-wokery was the big line of big line that Liz Truss talked about. But I don't think we really have a very clear idea for what they believe in.
And for me, I think one of the really strange things about this is that you have the governing party currently in government protesting against itself and its record. And these are not just backbenchers, people who have never got anywhere near the sort of levers of power. You have not just Jacob Rees-Mogg, of course, former cabinet minister. But you actually have a former party leader and prime minister, Liz Truss, who is also one of those effectively trashing and protesting against the record of not just the party that she is a part of, but the government that they have served in. I'd be really interested if there's any historians out there who can tell us whether this is completely unprecedented, just a bit unusual, completely bonkers, but in line with, how parties sometimes go after election defeats. But have we ever seen a government having this kind of protest against itself? But I just wanted to, before we talk a little bit more, I just wanted to sort of question something, which was, I wonder whether the Conservatives' greatest strength has become a weakness. So they've always been known to be, we've talked a lot about being flexible, being adaptable, changing to the changing circumstances. And whether that is what's led to such a kind of a splintering of all of these different groups. Who often say, I saw one of the things that were the popular conservatives again are against was the Office of Budget Responsibility. This coming from the government who were in place for what was it, 6 weeks or something like that, and ignored the Office of Budget Responsibility and then crashed the economy or brought in a mini budget, which nearly which forced the Bank of England to step in with to save lots of pension funds. And I wonder whether there's a kind of a bit of a protest against reality that they don't like being told things that they don't want to hear, even when they carry on doing what they want to do without being told what they want to hear. The results are not universally positive. But what more do we know about this and several other kind of groupings within Parliament, and especially Conservatives?
All this reminds me a bit of a few years ago when the sort of Corbyn era of Labour, and they were having a hard time in the media, a bit like the Conservatives have a sort of psychodrama now. And I think lots of people said, "Oh, this is just the lefties being lefties." Well, it's not, is it? It's across the political spectrum now. I think any party that's down seems to tear itself apart. I think it has a bit to do with the age of social media and multiple media outlets, and the fact that you've got like the GB News willing to like really profile this stuff. And there's a greater incentive, I think, for these groups to kind of brand themselves and have a profile. But the thing I wanted to particularly talk about was go back to kind of the original one of these. It's not quite the same as PopCon, because PopCon is a conference, a sort of more public thing. But the original grouping in Parliament, particularly, was the ERG a few years ago, who obviously were notorious for their influence over how things went down around Brexit.
Do you want to just spell out what ERG
So
stands for?
European Research Groups. This is the Eurosceptic Conservative MPs who brought down Theresa May, who were very instrumental in getting Boris Johnson into power and enforcing through what we used to talk about, the hard Brexit. So the kind of Theresa May customs union fudge obviously fell down, and these MPs were having no compromise of any kind, and ultimately they kind of won this tussle, of course, back in 2019, 2020. So my sort of theory of this is that.
Sorry, before we get into that, is it worth just kind of spelling out what European Research Group really means? So European obviously is because of their sort of Euroscepticism, but is it worth just spelling out what the research group kind of means in terms of its implications? Because I think that's something that we're going to sort of talk about and come back to.
Well, yeah, I meant to get onto that. And there's obviously it is a group of MPs in Parliament who share a similar ethos. But it's also a bit of a technical thing too. I have a little bit of experience of from past work I did on the regulations around it. But basically, MPs have a staff budget, and something they're allowed to do is pool it together, so they can make a kind of pooled pot of money, and they can pay for research services. And so the ERG do this. A number of other groups in Parliament do it. There's, it's within the rules, absolutely. Yeah. They are able to do it. But what it means they can do, as well as having a kind of grouping, is they can kind of have a almost a little mini think tank, or someone at least who is writing their briefings and helping them coordinate their messages, their lines to take. And normally it's only one person, two people doing this kind of thing. But it does give them, I think, a sense of organization that maybe in the past would only have come from the political party office or the whip's office. We'll have a sort of bit of a structure and staff in Parliament. But the ERG were an example, and there are a few others, of a sort of group of MPs who formed this kind of mini organisation, and that's played a role in helping them. I think the other thing, as I wanted to get on to, is that they became, the media will talk about the ERG, a bit like I slipped into, as you rightly corrected me, for something that is known, it's a brand. And I think this is something that politicians, and particularly politicians on the back benches, have clocked as a way of gaining influence.
It's also worth pointing out the ERG, the European Research Group, is perhaps the most high profile. But there are other ones that aren't necessarily sort of factions. So there's the China Research Group, where I believe a cross-party group of MPs who share a fairly sort of similar common position on China are doing the same thing. So they're pooling their sort of research budget to find out more and promote a certain sort of position on China. Do you know of any others,
Yeah,
whether
lots. And actually, I
factions?
don't believe the China Research Group used public money in that way. But there was talk of a Northern Research Group. This is within the Conservative Party, Northern Tory MPs, as you can imagine, this at 2019 intake. There's a talk of a working class Conservative group at different points. On Labour, there's only one well-known one that I'm aware of, which is the Socialist Research Group, which is obviously the left hand side of Labour. I believe they do have some kind of pooled research funding going on.
Do you know whether the Socialist Campaign Group and the Socialist Research Group are the same or different?
I don't know the same thing, but I'd be pretty sure they're the same MPs, and the same MPs. The Socialist Research Group will be the sort of that briefing service that I described for the ERG version of the Socialist Campaign Group.
What other groups? You said there was quite a few.
I think list the ones that came to mind. I'm sure there are other ones. It seems to have been something that's happened in the Tory party more than the Labour party, which made me is another reason I suspect the ERG was kind of the inspiration for this.
And what do you think this kind of tells us about both the state of the Conservative Party, but also how MPs are going to attempt to be a sort of effective within Parliament, and is this going to sort of change the nature of Parliament then?
Yeah, I think so. I think this parliament, and partly because of the dysfunction in the Conservative Party, but it's been very noticeable for a party. The big majority has had lots of trouble with its backbenchers. But actually, I think that was a growing trend before this, as I mentioned with the ERG back in before the last election. I think what MPs are clocking is that they can organise a group, pool their research fund and get some support, and kind of create a brand around that group, which is what the ERG did. And I think you'll see that repeated now in future parliaments. I think it probably could happen as well within Labour. We think Labour will get a pretty good result next election, probably a majority. But I wouldn't be surprised if you see groups of Labour MPs like the Socialist Research Group kind of create a branding for themselves, create their own voice distinctive from the government. And you might find there are others. One thing to point out, of course, is that the ERG is a single issue group. So that was at least initially about our membership or not the European Union and what Brexit looked like. The Socialist Research Group is obviously about a political positioning, but you could have other single issue groups. I mean, the idea of groups around the Israel Gaza issue come to mind. I'm sure there are other issues that are debated in Parliament that could, themselves warrant groups of MPs who kind of act as act as a campaign group on them. And it brings in lots of questions about how those groups are going to interact with interest groups outside of Parliament, lobbies, whether it's NGOs or businesses and things. So I think there'll be an interesting dynamic emerging around these kind of brands and organized groups in Parliament that has a bit more of a profile than it used to. So of course these groups always used to exist. I was reading about Gaitskellites and Bevanites the other day. I can't remember why I was reading about it. Of course, these things have always existed, but they didn't used to have the ability to promote social media, those kinds of things. They didn't used to have those kind of pooled research resources behind them. So my prediction is it's going to be a bit of a trend in British politics going forward.
Do you think that that trend is going to change how sort of governable, if that's a word, the different parties are going to be? Because if whether that sort of, I suppose, cause or effect of the dysfunction, as you talk about in the Conservative Party, whether these kind of rise of single issue factions is going to make it more difficult to kind of form and sustain a government. Or do you think that it's actually the difficulty in sort of forming, sustaining, and maintaining the government has led to this kind of splintering of these different groups?
There's no reason why it can't be both. But yeah, the simple answer, I do think probably governing is going to be harder. What used to feel like safe majorities, I reckon, might be more difficult. Remember, we're in the age of like parliamentary WhatsApp and things now, and people will be screenshotting each other's positions. They'll be using that as a way to coordinate and plot things. Plot sounds more devious than it probably is most of the time. But yeah, I do think you're going to see more. The pace of everything's got quicker, and you're going to see these groups organizing and saying things in public more. And that's going to just make them, I think, hard to govern. So it'd be really interesting to talk to people in, for example, whips offices these days, whether the MP, the whip, or their support staff. Because I would have thought over the last few years that's going to have become a more difficult job to get the result you want out of.
So I wonder how much this is sort of cause and how much is effect. That if you look at the manifesto of 2019 that resulted in the Conservative Party winning, or the Conservative Party in 2019 stood on the sort of Johnsonite manifesto of keeping taxes down, massively ramping up spending. Getting Brexit done and sort of very little else. And it's funded, obviously, it's very much a dishonest position. So, given that they were, the whole Boris Johnson thing, it's kind of have your cake and eat it. You promise lots of stuff and then like find a way to try and weasel out of the blame when it goes wrong. That's obviously my personal view of that particular sort of type of politics. But I wonder whether that in itself leads to leads to that kind of fracturing a bit more readily and easily than if you had a more sort of coherent and disciplined offer, because it might lead to a more coherent and disciplined party. And also, potentially as well, the rise of your sort of GB news and other sort of sources of news, there is more of a platform for those with more of a platform, if that makes sense. So previously, you might have had the, let's say, the European Research Group, the sort of or the Northern Research Group, or I don't know whether a sort of common sense group of Conservative MPs have their own sort of research funds, etc. But they've got in GB News potentially a new, different, unusual outside of your sort of BBC, ITV, and Sky kind of platform, but the one that is potentially much more willing to amplify that position in the same, in the way that you wouldn't have a left wing, or there isn't really a sort of mainstream-ish left wing version for Labour and the sort of Labour position. So you know, Navarra Media is not comparable in reach potentially to say GB News. So the different sort of factions and groupings within the Labour Party might just not gain that traction in sort of the public sphere in the same way that the Conservatives would. What do you think about any of that?
Well, you remembered one that I'd forgotten. So you mentioned the Common Sense group there, and that is another one of the a conservative group, which common sense means, you know, brackets anti-woke. I knew I'd forgotten one. Yeah, I think you're onto something there with a couple of those points. There's definitely something about media loving a story and loving, like, yeah, it's a good kind of gossipy story, isn't it? This group against that group, and when they've got a clear external profile, it gives the media something to go on. Let's see whether the kinds of groups you might get on the left get the same traction as the ERG and others get on the right. I don't know. I don't know how much it is to really do with the sort of more niche GB news type things versus, say, the fact that, you know, the traditional, the Times, the Sky News, all those kinds are willing to cover this stuff. I imagine a bit of both, but I think the thing will stick around. The other thing you put your finger on, which I think is right, is that, hey, go back to when we started podcasting a few years ago. The thing we kept talking about was how, you had these Brexit divides, and you had old coalitions that kind of made sense, dividing line of British politics that kind of hung together people with actually varying views. That's all been shaken up still quite a bit, and that lends itself to having bits of parties that have quite a different view on, say, woke issues, or, you know, the OG was Brexit and things. So isn't that just one? We're here on the economy, one side, another side, dividing line that used to perhaps organize things. So yeah, I think you might be onto something with that being, you know, that's shaken things up. And so it kind of makes sense to have these little active factions a bit more high profile than they used to be.
Because I suppose I'm thinking back, so we had Bim Afolami on this podcast some time back to talk about One Nation conservatism, which I don't know whether you'd call that a faction or an ideological strand, but that's obviously a sort
They've
of
got a group,
another.
actually. They've got a group. They're not the same. They're not one of the pooled researchers that re research groups that I mentioned. But there's definitely a One Nation. I think they call them to the caucus, actually, led by Damian Green, I believe. But yeah, another one for the list would be the One Nation moderate group.
So I think, I know, I think it's sort of good point that you raised that as single issue, as these sort of single issues in general, I think I get the impression that single issues have sort of become more important as party identification has decreased. Now that there's social media, things like GB News, the sort of new news outlets. I think there's Times Radio, Talk TV, possibly. So there are more sort of outlets for these sorts of things. But I suppose there is all, from what I can tell, splits is always a story. So there was a piece I read in the New Statesman the other day, tensions arising between, or you know, tension between Starmer and Reeves is growing at the top of the top of the Labour Party. You know, whenever there's a party doing well and either in government and doing well or looking like Labour is looking like they will soon be in, or potentially soon-ish be in government within the next year, if as things stand. But splits is always a story. So, you know, some Labour MPs say this, some of them say something else, or you know, whichever party. So I wonder whether there will always be a bit of a there'll always be a bit of enthusiasm amongst people who cover politics for this kind of story of these sorts of different groups. But then I could also see, you know, potentially if you're elected on a more realistic manifesto, maybe it doesn't quite give rise to sort of proliferation because it's not just single issues, you know. So the European Research Group is this particular sort of single issue, but Northern Research Group arguably is maybe a single issue of potentially sort of leveling up the northern investment in the north of the country. But then common sense, you know, they're sort of single issues, but they're not really, they're about different sort of factions of it and ideological kind of trends within the Conservative Party. And I don't know if Labour has that. Like traditionally the Labour Party, obviously, you know, if you have one Labour Party member, you have two conflicting opinions. You know, the Labour Party members can pretty much get in a fight in an empty room of some ideological sort of position or other. But seeing as the Corbyn sort of movement seems to have largely dissipated, there's obviously some of the Socialist Campaign Group MPs, there's the McDonalds and your Abbotts and Richard Burdens, etc. But they don't. There doesn't seem to be that kind of fragmentation within the Labour Party. Whether that's just the discipline of being near power, I'm not sure whether that is a genuine sort of wholesale change in the party. Plus, of course, if Starmer as leader has maintained a tight control over the candidate selections, then you're very unlikely to see a large swathe of far left MPs who would support Corbyn elected in the next round, and you're potentially much more likely to see moderates who support more Starmer-like position might lend themselves better to sort of greater discipline, but not just the discipline, but actually coherence. Because I do think, you know, there is quite a lot of gap between, say, the positions of the different conservative factions or caucuses or whatever over Rwanda, where you know, the One Nations would say if this changes at all, we'll vote against it. But then whoever the other group was saying, you know, if this doesn't change, we'll vote against it. There might just be more sort of ideological coherence to a Starmer-led Labour government, potentially. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I think you're right that it's definitely not going to be the case that you're going to get loads of Labour MPs on the what you call the left coming in this time around. You're probably going to end up though with still a group, still a Socialist Campaign Group slash SRG faction. I'm sort of interested in whether you'll get more than that in the Labour Party. I mean, there's at the moment the reporting is around the kind of Wes Streeting gang who apparently are much more cautious about saying too much about policy, so it's the 28 billion for climate that's in the news this week versus the sort of Lisa Nandy type crowd with the likes of Angela Rayner, as has been reported, who are sort of wanting more positive, more radical, say a bit more about policy. And I wonder whether you know that may not become factions, but you could kind of see a sort of soft left or something else happening in Parliament. I'm not sure. I think you're going to get socialist group against the rest. Whether you get other ones, I think it's really interesting. And then whether you get others who you just say split off on single issues as they come up, I can see that happening. But I don't think it's certain. But I guess we'll see.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Steve, and thank you very much for listening. This has been No Man's Land. Goodbye.
Goodbye.